OWC Radio 2.0, episode number 24, a conversation with Nathan Timothy. Hey everyone, it is OWC Radio. I'm Tim Robertson. Thanks very much for downloading this episode, number 24. Got a really cool, let's call it a conversation. I guess you could say interview. I'm still torn on that, whether I call it an interview or a conversation. I like the connotation of conversation more than interview. Because it's a dialogue back and forth. It's not just me asking questions. But regardless, it's a really fun one. Nathan Timothy, I think you'll enjoy it. That's going to come the second half of the show. But there's a few things I wanted to talk about before we get to that. Some really cool things happened at OWC over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, and something really cool coming up. So I thought I'd spend a little bit of time right here at the beginning talking about it. Number one, January 6th through the 9th is CES, the 2015 International CES. Wouldn't it be cool to be that voice guy? Maybe it'd be annoying if you talked like that all the time. Hey, what do you want for dinner? I want steak for dinner. So CES happening the 6th through the 9th, January, and OWC will be there. We're going to be in the South Hall at booth 30572. So Las Vegas Convention Center, South Hall, booth 30572. We really do hope you stop by. We've got some really cool, brand new things that you've never seen going to be displayed in the booth. Can't wait for you to see them. And I'm going to talk about two of the things we're going to have that you're going to want to take a look at. Well, at least one of the things I know for a fact is going to be in the booth. And that is the OWC Thunderbolt 2 dock. Now, we are taking January pre-orders for this. You know, this is something that is really, really needed. Expandability for Macs without any kind of an internal expandability like, I don't know, the iMac, your MacBook Pro, your MacBook Air. You really can't expand. You can't put a second hard drive in these new machines. And at least for me, I hate reaching around the back of my iMac to fumble around for the USB cable. Now, the nice thing is the iMacs do have quite a few USB cables, but it's not enough for me. Look, I've got a printer. Actually, I've got two printers that I plug into my USB, into the USB on the Mac. I've got a laser printer and I've got an inkjet printer that's also a scanner. I've got my iPhone 6 Plus. I've got two iPads, my wife's iPhone 5S, and my older iPhones that are basically iPod Touches at this point. The kids play with them. I've talked about that in the past. I've got a game controller that I plug in that's via USB. I've got a couple of external hard drives that I plug in via USB. I've got my newer tech Voyager that I plug in via USB. I'm already out of ports here. I'm already out of ports. That's the cool thing about the OWC Thunderbolt 2 dock. With this dock, it gives me two Thunderbolt 2 ports, a FireWire 800, and which is good for me because I do have an older camcorder. It's the, what is it? It's, wow, I'm drawing a blank on the name. Doesn't matter. It took tapes. It's digital, but it takes the tapes. It's not the hard drive one. And I still have a lot of tapes that I've been procrastinating because it's kind of a daunting job, to be honest. I need to transfer all my old tapes to my computer and export them to save them digitally. That's kind of a big job. And unlike, you know, like if you take a video on your cell phone, if the video on your iPhone is, say, an hour long, that's a long video on your iPhone, but it's not going to take an hour to transfer it. On tape, it's going to take an hour to transfer it because it's one-to-one. It literally is playing on the camera and it's recording that output on your computer. Even though it's recorded digitally on the tape, you can't just drag a file over. It's a tape. So I still have a need for a FireWire 800 port. Technically, my camera is a FireWire 400, but I have a cable that goes from 800 to 400, so I could just plug it right in. Final Cut Pro sees the camera, and I can import the footage that way. But, you know, that again, same thing, that the port on my iMac is in the back. It'd be so much easier if it wasn't in the back of my Mac. It was on a hub right next door. And this dock, the OWC Thunderbolt 2 dock, will give me that ability. It's right there. It also has an HDMI port, gigabit Ethernet, audio in and out, and USB ports. five more USB 3.0 ports. That would be... I need that. I mean, no question about it. So what I would personally do is leave the things that are never going to get unplugged from my Mac, like my printers and scanners and stuff, leave those plugged into the back of the iMac that I don't have to reach around and mess with those. And the things that I'm going to be plugging in and out, perfect. The Thunderbolt dock is absolutely perfect for that. And if you want to see the Thunderbolt dock, because some people like to see before they buy, right? Perfect opportunity. Come to CES and take a look at it. Again, we're going to be in the South Hall, Las Vegas Convention Center, booth 30572. And you can take a look at the OWC Thunderbolt 2 dock. It's amazing. I can't wait to get my hands on it personally. I can't wait to have it on my desk. And I have such a need for this. You know, I have basically two computers that I use almost on a daily basis. I have my iMac 27-inch, and I also have my MacBook Pro. It's a 15-inch MacBook Pro. It's about 2 years old now. It's so much better with an SSD. But regardless, what I don't have and what I always kind of wanted was that new Mac Pro. It's a fast machine. What I didn't like is Apple didn't really make it upgradable. That kind of always bothered me. Well, guess what? If you follow our blog, The Rocket Yard, which is at blog.macsales.com, or you've been on social media in the last few days, you've probably heard the news, and it made the rounds at a lot of the Mac websites out there. OWC announces the Aura SSD as the industry's first SSD upgrade for the 2013 Mac Pro. It's available for pre-order now, and it should be shipping within a few weeks. Now, this is, to me, I'm not surprised at all that OWC is the company to hit the market first. Being first is one thing, but having a quality product is another. And we hit the ball out of the park with this one. 1 terabyte and 2 terabyte upgrades for the 2013 Mac Pro SSD. That's right, 2 terabyte upgrades. Industry-leading controller. It's engineered for the Mac. There's no extra software. You don't have to hack anything. It's designed and assembled in the USA. Transfer speeds up to 730 megabytes a second. Comes with a 3-year warranty. And you know, you pull the old SSD out, what do you do with that thing? Well, as a bonus, OWC is going to, with this kit, with the Aura SSD for Mac Pro kit, send you, you ready? This is cool. The OWC Envoy. See, I'm trying to speak too fast. Plus, I have a cold. My lips feel kind of chappy and I'm really congested, so please forgive me. The OWC Envoy, I keep saying Envoy, I don't know why, Envoy Pro. It's an external enclosure, and it allows you to take your original SSD from your Mac Pro, put it in this, and use it as an external drive. And it's going to be blazing fast. So you're not wasting anything. It's not like, well, you know, I bought this Mac Pro, and I got the SSD in there, and... You know, I haven't filled it up all the way, but I do need more storage space. It'd be great to put a 2 terabyte SSD from OWC in here. But what do I do with the one that's in there? Well, There you go. You put it in the Envoy Pro using an external drive, and you're good to go. In fact, it's a really good way to transfer and set up your Mac with the new hard drives. Let's say you don't want to start from scratch, but how do you transfer all the content from your Mac Pro SSDs to the new SSDs when you install them? Well, you take the old SSD, you put it in the Envoy Pro, connect it via USB 3.0, and transfer the information that way. Simple, fast, reliable. This really makes me wish I had a Mac Pro. But to be honest, I'm happy with my iMac. I'm happy with my MacBook Pro. I don't really have a personal need for a Mac Pro. I just think they're really cool looking. And now the OWC is actually selling an upgrade kit that goes all the way up to 2 terabytes. 2 terabytes SSD. That's, wow, that's amazing. So if you have a Mac Pro, or you were even thinking about ordering a Mac Pro, but you were hesitant because there really wasn't an upgrade path for it from third-party vendors like OWC, now there is. You know, OWC's had a history going back to the original Mac Pro of offering upgrades and keeping that Mac Pro that you invested a lot of money in on the cutting edge. And that continues with the brand new Mac Pro. Check it out. If you go up to blog.macsales.com, it's right on the front page. And the headline is, OWC announces the Aura SSD as the industry's first SSD upgrade for the 2013 Mac Pro and availability for pre-order. So, looking forward to a fun year. There's going to be a lot of new products that we're showing at CES, and a lot of new products coming out in 2015 that I'm dying to tell you guys about. But of course, I can't tell you about it yet. We see the messages that you guys post up on Twitter and Facebook asking for an upgrade for this machine or this type of upgrade for that type of machine. Where is it? Where is it? All I can say is have patience. We hear you. We know what you guys are looking for, what you guys need, and what you guys want. But we don't just throw things together and make a quick buck and sell it and it's inferior quality. That's not what OWC has ever done. When we put our name on something and we put it up there for sale and we give you a 3-year warranty on a product like we are, there's a reason for that. There's a reason that it takes a little bit longer. Being first out of the gate is cool, but it's not the most important thing to us. Making a quality product, something we can be proud to put our name on, that's important. Having it reliable for you, that's important. Making it cost effective for you, that's important. Being first out of the gate, again, cool. Not the most important thing. So we know what you guys are looking for. We know the products that you're hoping to see soon. We know what you want to upgrade your Mac with. And all I can say is we are hard at work building the next generation of upgrades for your Mac. And we hear you. And I would love to be able to tell you what's coming down the pike. What you're waiting for to give you the good news right now. But I'm not going to do that. You're just going to have to wait because it's worth waiting for. And that's the thing. You know, the new Star Wars teaser trailer came out last week. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I saw the original movie in 1977. In 1977, I remember sitting in the movie theater watching it for the first time. And it blew me away. So I've been a huge Star Wars fan my whole life. And I know there's sites out there devoted to giving all the information possible for the new movies coming out. I don't go to those sites because here's the thing. I don't want to know before I'm able to watch it. I don't want things spoiled for me. I also don't want to read false rumors. Now, a teaser trailer, that's great. That's coming from the official source. I'm going to watch it. In fact, I've watched it probably 50 times. And when the Millennium Falcon shows up in the TIE Fighters, I get chills. That's my childhood on the screen right there. But I know it's going to be good because I hope it's going to be good. Because I trust the people that are making this film. And I don't want to know more until it's ready. Until I can actually go and watch the movie. It's kind of the way I look at products coming out of OWC. And I hope you guys feel that way, that until you can actually order it, or there's a firm shipping date, why talk about products that are still under development? Things could change. New technologies could come out that makes us go in a different direction to make the products that we're working on even better. So please be patient if you have a machine that you've been just waiting and waiting and waiting for an upgrade, and it seems like nobody's listening. We are listening. We are working on a lot of new products, a lot of new upgrades, and we hear you. We have the same machines. We're Mac users just like you, and we're going to put our name on a product, and it's got to be a quality product. So please be patient. But if you're a Mac Pro user, we've got an upgrade for you, 1 and 2 terabyte SSD. If you've got more cords than you have ports, OWC Thunderbolt 2 dock. It's ready to go. You can pre-order it now. You'll have it in your hand in January. But they are selling fast, so if you want one and you want to get it in January, you need to go up to macsales.com and put your pre-order in. So with that, I'm going to wrap up this segment of OWC Radio. I apologize for, maybe I sound a little different. I am really congested. The weather changed. There's something in the air. Speaking, I'm having problems pronouncing some words right now. Well, just one word, right? I don't know what that's about. That's just weird. It really is. I'm going to practice saying, envoy. I don't know why. Envoy. See, now I could say envoy. OWC Envoy Pro. Why couldn't I say that earlier? I don't know why. It's not like it's a some strange, 25 con. I don't know. I sometimes it just doesn't pay to be me. Thanks again for listening to this episode of OWC Radio. We'd love feedback from you. It's owcradio@macsales.com. Send an email in. If you want to send audio comment, you can do that too. Record it on your phone and send it to that email address, owcradio@macsales.com, and we'll play it right here on the show. We've got some really cool interviews and conversations lined up moving forward. I'm finalizing one for next week, as a matter of fact, that is totally out of left field. I think it would be, a very, very cool conversation. I wish I could tell you who, but again, it kind of goes back to the spoiling Star Wars and that thing. Unless it's set in stone, unless I know for a fact that this person's coming in, I generally don't talk about upcoming guests specifically. In fact, when I record this episode, I've already done the interview with the person and I'm recording it in reverse order. In other words, Nathan Timothy, I did the interview actually 2 days ago, but I don't want to do the first segment until the second segment's done, because I don't want to talk about, hey, I've got this guy coming up on the show, or I've got this person coming up and, it's a really great interview, but I haven't actually done the interview yet, because I think that would be disingenuous, right? So I've got someone lined up, I hope, for next week. It should be a really fun conversation. But I would love to get your feedback. What do you guys think of these conversations? Are there other people that you think would make great guests? Are you interested in coming on OWC Radio? You don't have to be an award-winning this or a renowned person in this field. I would love to talk to you as just a Mac user. Let's talk about your history on using Apple products. Maybe you jumped in with an Apple II. Maybe you have fond memories of going to Macworld Expo in New York or Boston. Come on the show. We'll talk about that. I love the history, this rich history of technology that a lot of us share. You know, I've been writing about the Mac for 20 years now, and it's a great history, a great industry. I've made some of the best friends in my life because of this industry. Excuse me. I met my wife because of this industry. So it means a lot to me, and I love reliving the history with people. So if you're interested in something like that, if you've been in this a Mac user for a long time, come on the show. Let's talk about it. Let's relive some of those fun moments looking back. And the nice thing is we got a lot to look forward to because it's only getting better in my opinion. So thanks again for listening to OWC Radio. I will see you next week. And don't forget, if you're going to be in the Vegas area, January 6th through the 9th, CES, we will be there. Las Vegas Convention Center, South Hall 3, booth 30572. See you soon. And we are back here on OWC Radio, episode number 24. And like I was talking about at the beginning of the show, we have a special guest today. His name is Nathan Timothy. By the way, great last name.
Thank you. my middle name's Robert as well.
So is it really? Oh, so we're just the opposite pretty much.
There's some weird stuff going on here.
That's the mirror universe. Nathan Timothy is the CEO of the Nathan Timothy Foundation in London, correct?
Correct, yes.
So tell me, what is the Nathan Timothy Foundation? Because I was reading about this on your website, found it fascinating. I didn't know anything like this existed, and I just think this is a brilliant idea.
Thank you very much. Well, to make it easy for people to digest, we call it the songwriting charity. So essentially what it is we go into schools teaching children how to write songs. So children from as young as 7, and we work with children up to the age of about 25, so young people up to the age of 25. And we're teaching them how to write songs.
That's so brilliant. How did this get started? What was the one catalyst that kind of kickstarted this whole thing?
Yeah, I was a teacher, a primary school teacher. So what happened was I was doing lots and lots of anti-bullying work, and we were asked to, a couple of teachers that I knew were asked to organize an anti-bullying event. And prior to the event taking place, the funding got pulled. So we were due to put on this big showcase for children. So lots of different workshops going on, and the funding got pulled. And I said, "Well, we can't let the children down. Just cannot do that. It's not allowed. We told them that we're going to do it. We can't
absolutely
say this isn't going to happen anymore." So I said, "Well, we'll rally around and we'll try and get people to do some workshops, anti-bullying stuff." And we got some people in to do art workshops and drama and dance. And we couldn't get anybody to do music. So I stepped up and I said, "Well, I'll do a songwriting workshop in a day. We'll try and get as many ideas as we possibly can." And what happened was there was this incredible moment where I was sat there and children were writing songs, and I thought, this is just the most incredible feeling.
Uh-huh.
Because the children were empowered to create something from nothing, and they were so proud of it, and it was so powerful when we played the songs back at the end of the day that I thought, I've got to develop this, I've got to do it. So from that little moment, I developed the idea a bit more over about a year, and then gave up my teaching job in 2007, and then started literally phoning up schools and saying, "Can I come in and do this workshop?" And that's kind of how it started, and that was 2007. So yeah, it's been a while since I've been out there doing it, and it developed into the songwriting charity.
Now, do you primarily concentrate in the UK?
We're able to work in the UK and Wales, We've done a little bit of work over in Italy as well, through organizations over there. And we're due to go back to Italy again in January, working with Save the Children. So that's quite exciting.
This is, it's almost like a movie plot.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those movie plots that is inspiring that Richard Dreyfuss was in or something. I'm thinking of Mr. Holland's Opus, but
right.
That's what it kind of reminds me of. So you went from teacher to running this charity organization. What's the message of the charity organization itself?
Well, the whole thing is about inspiring the next generation of songwriters. That's kind of what I'm about. I'm trying to get kids really fired up into writing, and not just writing to become famous, but writing because it helps whatever situation or whatever thing they're having to deal with in their lives, you know, and that's kind of what it's about. And I'm don't get me wrong, I'm not preaching or anything to them, but it's just getting them to enjoy the process, because I love creating something from nothing, you know. The whole thing about the charity thing was, you know, creating something from nothing, and I just love that.
Music is very universal.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And there's so many different genres of music. How do you handle that as a teacher teaching these kids how to write a song and how to? I assume that there's a performance aspect to this as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's very much I go in and it's a level playing field. Most of the time, the team or myself, we don't know the children at all. We've never met them before, so we have to win them over. And then inspire them to create something from nothing. So, as the day goes on, the children will come up to us in little groups and they'll have millions of ideas, different genres, different styles.
Right.
And our jobs as music producers and the filter, if you like, is to make sure they're happy. So sometimes you have, rap fused with classical and, you know, all these wonderful things going on. And that's okay. That's fine. Because we're not trying to write hit songs. We're trying to just write songs that the children are really proud of, that they know that they've written. So that when we play it back to them at the end of the day, they know they've done it.
So you've been doing this since 2007. Has anybody gone on to... I guess they would be just getting out of high school, the original group of kids.
Yeah. No, well, what's interesting, I'm not sure whether any of them have gone on to do anything like mega, mega amazing. But what is amazing, I think, is that I often bump into children that I did work with back in 2007, and they're still able to sing the songs.
Really? They remember it?
Yeah. And they're still able to sing the messages, you know, that are contained within them. And I think that's pretty special.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I'm really proud of that. That's a great thing.
So let's go way back. Were you very musical when you were growing up?
I suppose. I always had sort of music flying around inside my head. And I was kind of torn because I was into athletics. I really loved running and jumping over things. I was kind of told by my parents that you can either do one or the other. So I've always had this dilemma as to which thing to do. You know, whether I do the running or whether I do the music. And I figured that the music was always going to be there. So I did the running first, and I was fortunate in that I did really well at that, and I was like a junior international, and I ran for.
You're a jock.
I was a high hurdler, so I did lots of, jumping over sticks, running really fast. I did that for a while, but always writing, and I didn't have a piano for such a long time. But I had the melodies in my head, and I could always write melodies. So I kept a book, and I used to write melodies in that. And then I had this one of my training partners' mum had a piano, and I convinced her to sell me this piano. So for something like 50 quid, which is absolutely nothing.
Nothing, right?
And I then I literally turned up one day knocked on my mom and dad's door and said, look, I've bought a piano. And then we lived in this really small house, and we had to find somewhere to put it.
So, were they not happy?
They weren't happy at all, to be honest. It was kind of probably the most traumatic thing I've ever done.
But yeah, I mean, it's a piano. It's not like a stray puppy.
No, that's true. But that shows you the kind of passion that I had for the music. Was just, I couldn't.
Did you take lessons or anything, or it was just it was intuitive for you?
Absolutely intuitive. Yeah, I just desperately wanted to play the piano.
Were you hearing the music in your head before you even had the piano? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And.
So maybe a little bit of a protege in there.
Oh, I don't know. What's interesting for me now is that my son, who's 10, he's doing all the piano lessons and stuff, and I'm kind of seeing what I could have been.
Yeah.
through him, and you know, it's such a wonderful thing to experience, really.
How does he feel about what dad does?
What does he thinks I'm crazy.
Does he?
he's
10. That makes sense.
He's already a better piano player than I'll ever be. You know, I'm really proud of that. I think he's a great kid. So, and he's already kind of improvising and doing all the things I do.
So you bring a piano home. How did you get it home? Did you get somebody to?
Yeah, that's another story. I hired a van. I found a man with a van, and he.
How old were you?
I would have been about 12 or 13. So
you're out there renting vans and buying musical instruments, big pianos. That's passion, man. That's passion. Yeah,
absolutely. I'm very stubborn. When I've got an idea for something, I just stick at it until I achieve it.
What did your dad do for a living?
My dad was a teacher. He was a lecturer at university.
Okay. So there's kind of a correlation between, I think, music and education too.
Sure. No, there definitely is. I think the funny thing about that piano is that it became my dad's bookshelf. it was because the only place we could find to put it was in his study. So he'd be in there working, and I'd be in there hammering away at the piano, and I'd be driving him crazy because we couldn't afford to get the thing tuned. So it was years and years of our out of tune playing. So then when I went away to college, first thing he did was cover it in books. So I'd come home and I'd be like clearing the books off the piano, and he'd be saying, "What are you doing to my bookshelf?" You
know? Yeah, right.
So it's great.
But he didn't get rid of it.
No, he didn't get rid of it. They didn't get rid of it until I went until a bit later on when I was at university and I'd finished university and I wasn't. They knew I wasn't going home, so they got rid of it. It went to an old people's home, so that was really pleased about that.
Any chance you could ever get that back?
Well, the piano. No, yeah. I wouldn't want to. I think it's doing good there. I think
good. Yeah. I think it's great. It's a great story. And again, I'm seeing a movie script here, man. it plays out. I mean, now obviously you didn't become the fifth Beatle or anything, but
No. I think the thing with me is that I've always been writing songs, and of course it would be lovely to be, you know, remembered for the songs I've written. But I've always had this thing where I've accepted that my talent is really inspiring kids. You know, that's the thing that I certainly in 2007, when I left teaching, I thought I can't stop teaching because, you know, this Mr. Timothy character, this Mr. Timothy is much loved, and I didn't want to say goodbye to him really. So the songwriting charity and everything I've done since 2007 has been all about turning kids on to music and getting them fired up and almost giving them the, you know, or trying to give them the same passion I had when I went out and, you know, convinced somebody to get me to sell me their piano, trying to give them that passion. That's really what I'm trying to do.
So what is, you won something from the Olympics. In 2012, the charity was awarded the official Olympic Inspire Mark. What is that?
Locog award that to programs and to things that were inspiring the values of the Olympics. So we at the time we were running a program called Sports Track. So we were writing lots and lots of sports anthems with children. So and what was really cool was that we did something like 130 or 140 sports anthems. It was like being on a treadmill. So, you know, you'd be in a school one day and you'd think, have I done this bit before? You know, it was the most surreal thing. And we didn't know whether the Olympics was going to be any good for us in the UK. We didn't know whether it was going to be a flop or at the time. So we were writing all these really positive, uplifting songs. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I was really genuinely hoping that the Olympics was going to be successful because I kind of knew what would happen to the songs if it was.
Oh, yeah, it'd be huge.
And, yeah, the songs were just, because of the success of the Olympics, the songs got played and played everywhere, all around London and, you know, everywhere. All these different schools were singing them, and it was just, for us, as the charity, we kind of, because by the time the Olympics came, we'd done all the work, and we were just sort of sitting and watching all these stories come flooding in of, you know, the songs and stuff, so that was another, another proud moment, really, where the songs were being sung everywhere. And I think one of the choirs that my colleague Ben was leading, I think that they performed inside the Olympic Stadium as well. So that was something special.
And this is a charity you created from scratch.
Yeah.
And it's being, you're at the Olympics and people are playing your music. I mean, how inspiring is that for you personally? How rewarding is that?
That's great. No, it's I can't put a price on that.
Really. Could you have imagined this in 2007 when you started?
No, not at all. I think the thing with me is I focus on, you know, changing one person at a time. And I think the guys that run the chat, John and Ben, who work with me on a daily basis, we're very much on the same page with that. Trying to change one at a time.
So I would be remiss if I didn't mention you also have 6 albums out there.
Yeah.
So
I'm a busy man. I don't rest very often.
No, I was going to say 6 albums. When did you start recording albums?
Good. Oh dear.
Were you still teaching?
I was. Yeah. 1998, I would class as my first album. I did some stuff before that. But 98 was my first proper album, the Corrections album. I think we recorded that, and that was after a year of gigging and, you know, finding the band and rehearsing like crazy. And
is it still the same band, or has the lineup changed?
No, well, there's different people drop in and out, but essentially it's the same people. I've always worked with the same people. Same keyboard player Steve, who plays with me. He's been with me since day one.
Now, is there any crossover between the charity organization and the band?
I think of it all as the same thing. Absolutely, all as the same thing. But what I do with my music is I use that in the workshop to show the children, you know, what I can do and where I am with. You know, my writing, and I show them stuff that, you know, play them stuff that doesn't work or I didn't like, or and then I play them something I'm working on that I'm really proud of.
Where does technology talk about, you know, go ahead?
Sorry,
no,
yeah, ahead. It's very often that the songs have a story behind them, so you know, I like to just tell them the stories behind the songs and say, look, you know, I try and compare with what, you know, I'm trying to get them to do.
This is the song that when I was destitute because the government came after all my money and...
Absolutely. No, I haven't got one of those yet.
No. Let's hope you never do.
Maybe that'll be on the next album. I don't
know. Yeah, there you go. So how does technology play into it?
Well, technology is a huge thing in my life. I absolutely love that. And I think that's probably because in the early days, because... Because I feel like I've missed, you know, a lot of time, you know, music, my music learning, if you like. There was a massive hole in that because I was doing all the running around and not playing my piano until I was 12, 13. I used technology as a kind of crutch, if you like. So technology enables me to play the things I can hear in my head much better. And I think what I do with technology is I'm able to put a frame around the kids' work, you know, really well. So I'm very quick with, you know, as soon as I can hear the melody, I can quickly put a frame around the children's work and play it back to them almost instantly, so that they can they get a feel for what it could sound like, and then we polish away until the end of the day. Really,
what's your main authoring software that you're using?
So I use Logic.
Self-taught, or did you take classes?
Oh, self-taught. Everything self-taught, really. I'm forever reading manuals, and I'm online, you know.
YouTube can be your best friend when it comes to learning new software, can't it?
YouTube is incredible. God, I would have loved YouTube when I was starting out. I think it's just such a wonderful resource for, you know, so many people. I think, how do you install a hard drive, for example? And they just type it in, and there you go. It's there. It's fantastic. So,
what's the reception from the parents of the kids that you're teaching? Do you hear from them a lot? Do they reach out to you?
Yeah, occasionally. What happens from if I'm in a school for 2 days straight, then I'll go in on the first day, write a song, and then I get a flavor as to what the parents think, and it's generally overwhelming. You know, the response. I guess the most amazing response is always when I go in and write, or the children write a school anthem. So they write something really positive about the school they're in. And then it gets played or taught to the whole school. And then, you know, the parents hear it and they download it and all that sort of stuff. So there's this whole, you know, it starts with just the words and then it becomes this whole community thing. And that's wonderful.
And yet the kids probably still have this sense of, I created this ownership, this participation of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I will always, you know, I often argue that, you know, because I'll present somewhere and I'll say, you know, this is what typically day looks like, and I'll play a video of the day, and some teachers will say, oh, so you go in with the song already written? No, absolutely not. No, I get such a buzz out of the children writing it and me, like I say, putting a frame around it.
I think it's amazing.
Proud of them.
So how does the kind of walk me through the process when you walk in? I assume that the kids know that this is going to happen, but they're young. They have no idea what it's about.
Yeah.
Is the anti-bullying message still part of it?
Yeah, I think the most popular program is still our Bully Beat program. Uh-huh. That's the thing that has the biggest impact, but that's the thing that, you know, that we are known for.
And it's still a big subject. I mean,
it's an interesting subject for children as well, you know, and it's one that's often misinterpreted in schools.
Yeah.
And misrepresented, if you like, and misreported.
But all the kids absolutely understand that message, anti-bullying, because bullying they all understand it.
Oh, yeah. By the end of the day, they certainly understand it. You know, they certainly understand why they're singing the song. And I always say to them, look, we're just trying to help one person.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one person that's not talking about it, if there's one person not able to articulate how they're feeling, you know, we're trying to help them.
So you walk in. What's the process? How do you get started? I'm really curious about this. You know, on Twitter you said, "Oh, look how close we are. We could have done it in person." Of course, you're in the UK and I'm in the Midwest of the United States, but
yeah.
I would love to see it in action. So how does it work? Yeah. You walk in and what do you do? And is it just you or is it a team?
It varies. We have this, the team of us that do. I've trained up a few people to do it now, and I'm really proud of those. They're very much on their own journey now with the workshop, and because it's very organized. I make it look or we make it look very relaxed and informal, but underneath the surface, there's this structure in place that's, you know, watertight.
Yeah, you have to do that.
So we know, but it has to be, you know, we know at a certain point what has to be done and blah, blah, blah. So at the end of the day, we have something to present back to the children, you know. The day starts typically at about 9 o'clock with me standing in front of them, just talking a tiny little bit about the charity and explaining why I'm there, and putting their, really trying to put them at ease and get to know them a little bit.
A lot of apprehension in that room at the beginning, I would imagine.
Yeah, and one of the things we do is we cover the microphone up, because I think that if you go into a room and you have a microphone out, the anxiety level is massive, because children are really worried that I'm going to make them sick, or I'm going to make them do something they don't want to do. And that's one of the things we say very early on, is that, you know, we're not going to make you do anything you don't want to do. But if you want to sing, if you want to dance, if you want to beatbox, if you want to rap, you know, that's fine. We'll let you do it. If you want to laugh, that's great. So the first part of the day is all about showing them how to improvise just using their voices. And then we move on to doing some really fun kind of warm-up games and improvised games that they all take part in. And I just sing silly things to them, you know. I sing their names to them, and they sing my name back to me, and we do loads of silly stuff at the start, just to kind of break down all those barriers, and for them to feel really comfortable. And I keep reinforcing the point that I'm not going to make them do anything they don't want to do. And literally by the break time, after I've played them a little bit of my music, I've told them how that particular song was created. They've already written loads and loads of words, because I kind of like this lots of different levels where I'm getting them brainstorming and writing ideas down as I'm talking to them. And you know, but certainly by lunchtime we probably would have recorded the half of a song.
Wow, that's pretty fast.
And it's just, yeah, no, it looks very natural, you know. But sometimes, you know, the children they're working in groups, or they're working individually on their lyrics and words and stuff, and you don't think anything's going to happen, and then all of a sudden, you know, a whole table will start singing something.
That's amazing.
And you've got this magical moment. And I say to the children that, you know, without the exact makeup of people in this room, the song would be totally different, because you don't know who's going to come up with that magical moment,
right?
That magical element.
So it's building a team, it's building community, yeah. It's a project that they're all going to participate in, and there's a finished product at the end of the day.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we leave the school with a CD, with you know, the song and an instrumental version of the song, and we also upload. Load it to our SoundCloud channel, which you can access through songwritingcharity.org by clicking on the orange button at the top. And often, if the funding's there, you know, we film the whole thing in HD as well.
Really?
So after a few weeks, the children get to see themselves creating their song. So that's really special.
So I've got something I do with our guests. I ask three random questions that's not based on you. It's literally three questions that I pulled out of the interwebs before we talked. So, and I'm going to get to those here in just a few minutes. But first I want to say, if people want to get a hold of you, where's the best way to go about that? What's the websites? What's the Twitter?
Yeah, the best place to get hold of us is songwritingcharity.org. Or our Twitter is at SW Charity.
SW Charity. Let me write that down, because I don't want to... SW... There you go. I got it. And remember, I will put these in the show notes for anybody listening in your car. You didn't get a chance to write this on the dust on your dashboard. Just go to blog.maxsales.com. Look for episode number 24, and I'll have links to Nathan Timothy's charity, his SoundCloud where you can buy it. I guess it's not SoundCloud, is it? It's just your website, nathantimothy.com. I was thinking it was SoundCloud. I don't know why. Oh, yeah, yeah, you do have SoundCloud there.
Yeah, we do have a SoundCloud link. NathanTimothy.com is my personal website, but the Songwriting Charity website is songwritingcharity.org.
.org, gotcha. But I'll have all those in the show notes. So if anybody wants to find you and follow you on Twitter, that's an easy way to remember to go there and find links to all your stuff that I find on the interwebs and get it linked over to you. Okay, ready for three random questions?
I'm ready. I'm standing by.
Okay. Right. Now, he didn't even know these three random questions were coming unless he listens to the last couple episodes. So the first one, pirates or ninjas?
Pirates.
Pirates. Why pirates? Why not ninjas? I think pirates are more, they have that singing tradition, right?
Yeah, the costume's cool.
Yeah, well, and they also, there's songs about pirates. There's no songs about ninjas.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. There's a subliminal thing there.
They're more theatrical, maybe. Yeah. Okay, pirates it is. Number two, what was your favorite cartoon growing up?
Oh, Hong Kong Phooey.
Really? The old Hanna-Barbera one.
Yeah, do you know that one?
Oh, of course, absolutely.
You know what? That purely because of the theme tune.
That was a good theme, yeah.
It was the funkiest theme tune.
It was definitely a 70s kind of vibe to it.
It had a very sort of Nile Rodgers chic kind of guitar thing going on there.
Okay, I haven't heard it in forever. Now I'm gonna have to go listen to it now.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely one of the best theme tunes.
That's they couldn't do that cartoon anymore.
No.
It would be insensitive.
Would it?
I think so. A lot of the stuff that we enjoyed as a kids, you look back and you go, ooh, really?
No, I haven't seen it for many years, but I just remember the theme tune. I think it's maybe the music for that.
I remember him wearing the Bruce Lee robe.
That's right, yeah.
I don't know if it was a robe or I don't know what you call it, the shirt. I just remember him wearing that. I thought he was cool looking.
Yeah, it's very cool.
If you had, now this is the question number three, if you had to move to another country, which country would you move to?
America.
Really? You'd come to the U.S.?
I'd love to, yeah.
Why? Why the U.S.?
I guess because I'm a massive film fan. I love film. So most of my films, the ones I like, are shot in America. So that's the short answer.
You could come here and make the adaptation of Hong Kong Phooey.
Yeah, but I'd make him a pirate. He wouldn't be.
It would be Pirate Phooey.
Yeah, he'd definitely be a pirate.
So, any pirate chance of you expanding this organization more worldwide? Because I think this is something that would work. You know, you obviously you wouldn't be able to do it personally in, let's say, Canada or the United States. But training someone to run a branch of it overseas.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. And there's no reason why that wouldn't work. We tried it in Italy. We've done very successful work in Italy, and we continue to do so. And one of my colleagues is French speaking, so I'd like to get her to do some stuff in France. So, absolutely.
It's universal. It's music.
Yeah,
People together.
And if we can be helping somebody in America, then absolutely, yeah.
You know, I have four kids, and I've got two that's out of school now, and I've got two that's in school. So it's almost like my wife and I kind of started over. And one of them's in first grade, and the other one's in sixth grade.
Okay, so explain to me now, how does the grading system work over there? First grade is what?
First, how old? Well, they start in kindergarten, and then they go first through 12th, and then they graduate 12th grade, usually around 17 years old. So first grade is usually 6, 7, 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
And, of course, my daughter in sixth grade, she's 12 years old. So that's the age bracket. Now, I know you kind of concentrate on how old?
Yeah, well, I think, and this is kind of I suppose because I was a primary school teacher, so I would have been working in, you know, first grade to sixth grade, you know.
Yeah.
That would have been my, that's my specialist area.
I think what you're doing would probably work. I don't know if it would work so much in high school. Yeah. They're a little bit more resistant to.
It does work. I have done it.
Have you?
It does work. The only reason why we, over here, why we don't do it is because it's very difficult to get a whole group of like 30 kids at off timetable.
Oh, yeah.
For a whole day in a secondary school. So that's the reason why we don't do as much of it.
I think you'd have the same problem in the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah.
But sure. I think it would be something that would be welcome here in the United States. I think it would be something that's honestly needed. And I think my kids in particular, I know they would love to do something like this. It's all my daughter would talk about for weeks, I know.
Yeah, no, that's something I'm really proud of. The children over here are exactly the same. They do, they talk about it for weeks. And one big thing with me is that when my children come out of school, I always ask them, you know, can you tell me something you've done today? And very often they can't.
Yeah, I run into the same problem.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to do with the workshop is give them something they want to tell people about.
Yep.
Something they read when they come out of school. They want to, right, Mum, Dad, this is what I've done today. They want to be so fired up about it. That's something I'm trying to do, and I know we are doing that quite successfully. So,
well, I hope that being here on OWC Radio helps. We have quite a few listeners in the UK. I'd love to see this organization come over to the U.S. If there's anything I can do to help facilitate that, just let me know. And thank you very much, Nathan Timothy, for being on OWC Radio this week. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for having us.